For 36 years, the Goldman Environmental Prize has celebrated everyday heroes who are showing us that every action has the power to turn apathy into positive change for the environment. Heroes like Bastiana Gurri and Olsi Nika, who helped create Europe's first Wild River National Park. Visit us at goldmanprize.org to discover the stories of this year's Goldman Environmental Prize winners. And learn how when it comes to protecting our planet, the doing makes the difference.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Spiegel and Holmes Show Flashback. Flashback.
I don't know. I guess, I mean, it's my life, right? I think that when I drive to the lakes, you know, Sheridan to head down to work some days, like, do I stop and get jealous and unable to complete my day looking at some of the houses on the water? Like, no, I don't. You got to do the best you can with what you have. And I think that's the job, right? You can't get jealous of everyone else. You know, they have their own challenges and own problems. And I think, we knew what our payroll was. We knew what we had to do. And I think, we worked hard this offseason to build the best team possible within that. And I just don't think you can get distracted by what others have. I don't think you can get distracted by, jealousy to your word or whatever, or complaining about it. You just move forward and try to do the best you can. And I think that there's only a handful of those in baseball, and that's a good thing, I think.
We talked with Jed Hoyer about the Dodgers and their front office at the beginning of the season. Yeah, they're back tonight, and that's it for the season. Hopefully you'll see them you'll see them in the LCS.
I mean, who else you want to see? San Diego?
No.
You want to see the Mets? Maybe.
Phillies?
Maybe. No. Aaron Nola can't pitch anymore.
Yeah, there's a struggle. But we asked him about their front office and their ability to do deferred contracts. And clearly everyone in Major League Baseball is jealous of their ridiculous television deal that they have. Was that a guy with another 24 years left on it?
Something outrageous. And the way they structured that deal, like they got Time Warner so good. They like built in an increase in expected viewers for an industry where the exact opposite has taken place in dramatic ways.
They have 15 more. Sorry, I shorted them. They've only got 15 more years left on a 25-year, $8.35 billion deal with Time Warner.
Unbelievable. But it's not just the money. Andrew Friedman does a lot of things really, really well. And they talk about it in this wonderful article that Tyler Kepner put together over at The Athletic. It's a really, really good baseball writer. And he's got really good contacts. And he talked with 40 different top decision makers from across MLB.
Okay.
Executives and a few coaches, but mostly executives, to have them rank the top 5 front offices in baseball. They could not vote for their own team. And they assigned a point value, 10 points for first place, 7 for second, etc., and offered anonymity. And this article is full of unbelievable quotes, as well as a ranking of the top 20 front offices around baseball. And yes, Lawrence, you know who's first.
Who are the Chicago White Sox?
They did not make it into the conversation. Oh. They were not in the others receiving votes category.
No.
You remember that when you were younger?
Oh, yeah. Others receiving votes?
Where, I mean, it still exists, but it's different than like the newspaper would come out on Monday and you're like, oh, who is my team receiving votes?
Top 25?
Yeah.
Yeah, like basketball top 25. And you're like, where's Illinois? Come on.
Where's DePaul? Oh, there they are.
Yeah, others receiving votes.
We're back, baby.
Yeah, White Sox not there. But are the Cubs. We'll get there. Number one is the Dodgers. Far and away the most first place votes. Far and away the most total points. And the way that they're talked about, there's one person saying that, yes, they do have, it's reached a point from a financial perspective of having an unfair advantage, but...
That's good work by your people.
But everyone says things like, they manage the roster so well. It feels like they have 60 guys on the 40-man. I don't know how they do it. Another, they've been built brick by brick for a long time. They do 100 things right every year to get where they are. So, lots of respect.
So look, isn't this the thing that you're hoping for? Like when Andrew Friedman was at the Rays, weren't we all going, man, what if that dude had a budget?
That's the dream.
And now, like, he's got the budget in baseball, and look at what he's doing with it.
So they're number one. The Tampa Rays are number two, and they have the second most first place votes as well, does Tampa Bay, and they're talked about as having, you know, here's something I didn't realize. They got the same hitting coach and pitching coach for 8 seasons. And Kevin Cash is in his 11th season.
He's one of my favorite managers.
So you develop guys and you churn the roster as much as they do and turn it over as much as they do. And they have exactly the same teachers teaching exactly the same organizational way at the big league level.
And they're always competitive. Now, they're kind of in a weird place because I don't know if they're ever going to win. But they're always competitive. And is that good enough? I don't think it is for the people down there because they don't like going and they should be in Montreal.
The Brewers are number three as the small market gold standard. And
that hurts a little bit.
Yeah, it does. It should hurt a little bit. They move on from David Stearns, who's now with the Mets, and Craig Counsell, who's here, and they do not miss a beat. Cleveland is fourth.
And the American League version of the Brewers.
Yeah, and Cleveland's talked about as the finishing school for front office people. So with Carter Hawkins here, that's interesting. Like that guy, Chris Antonetti, who's in charge in Cleveland, people say like he's just amazing at teaching people to then do the job other places. The Yankees are fifth, and you might think of Brian Cashman as not being so good, but that's not the way he's looked at around the league. One of the things they talk about is how they always have enough prospects to trade and get what they need.
That's fair.
Which because they draft well, they develop well. And so I thought that was interesting to see them that high. The Braves at six, the Phillies at seven, Dave Dombrowski right there.
Now look, inside of this, outside of the Rays and the Brewers, there's a lot of money we're talking about.
There is.
There's a lot of payroll, a lot of good television deals in that group.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. But it's also money and places that seem to develop their kids pretty well.
Yep.
So it's that combo. Arizona and Mike Hazen is there. Plenty of good trades. Talked about for them. The Orioles are there, one of few that excel in both hitting and pitching development.
The last 5 years for the Orioles as a franchise have been pretty tremendous because you could see it happening, and then everyone gets up, and for the most part, they've been as good as advertised.
Yeah, they've all gotten there together. Now, none of them have gotten extended, and they had only 1 year of a big money pitcher in Burns, and so we'll see what they do after that. So they're number nine. Number 10 is San Diego and A.J. Preller.
Go for it every year.
I freaking love that dude. Oh, they always draft well and do well internationally, some of the quotes talk about, so they have stuff to trade when they need to. They shed money and then add it again. I was thinking about this one trade tree real quick here. They give up Mackenzie Gore and James Wood and C.J. Abrams in the Juan Soto deal. That's a lot. But then they turn Soto around and send him to the Yankees after a year for Michael King, who's pretty much their ace right now, and Drew Thorpe, who they then turn around and send to the White Sox as the centerpiece of the Dylan Cease trade. So, yeah, they gave up James Wood and Abrams and Mackenzie Gore, but they still ended up with Michael King and Dylan Cease out of that mix, which is pretty amazing.
How about clean-shaven Dylan Cease? got rid of the mustache, got rid of the beard for a little bit.
The hair's still long, though?
Yeah, the hair is still long, but he got rid of that funky mustache he was rocking for a while.
Gavin Sheets homered to the opposite field yesterday out of the two hole.
Gavin Sheets is hitting the ball hard for the Padres.
So there's the Padres.
They figured
10.
Out a way to use him that makes perfect sense.
And no Cubs in the top 10. And then here's your others receiving votes.
I was very surprised to not see the Cubs at the top. I figured they would end up at like 10.
Uh-huh.
That's where I started to get nervous that you had sent me a bad link.
Yeah.
I got some bad information. That's what I thought.
Number 11 is the New York Mets, and they're expecting them to be higher next year as David Stearns does his Andrew Friedman thing on the East Coast. Number 12 is the Tigers with former Cub exec Scott Harris. Number 13 is a tie between the Astros and the Rangers. Number 15 is the Twins. Number 16 is the Royals. Number 17 is the Mariners. Number 18 is the Red Sox, with former Cubs director of pitching Craig Breslow now in charge.
I didn't hear you say Chicago Cubs.
Number 19 is the Reds, tied with the Washington Nationals.
The Cincinnati Reds? Wait a minute. Didn't the Washington Nationals trade away a Hall of Fame lineup?
Pretty much. Well, I mean, they let Bryce Harper walk. Then they traded Soto. They also traded Trey Turner.
Yeah.
And Max Scherzer. The Soto trade looks great. So I don't know.
Schwarber?
They only got, they had Schwarber and didn't keep him. So I don't, you could certainly quarrel with some of these at the bottom, for sure. I mean, the Reds have a host of young, interesting kids, but they haven't added anything to it.
And they ain't one bleep.
Yeah. You could quarrel with the Nationals, but so there's your top 20. Others receiving votes, did not receive votes.
Didn't the Nationals also give Anthony Rendon a ton of money before he got a ton from the Phillies?
No.
Or was that just arbitration?
No. Rendon got the money from the Angels.
Okay. All right.
So they let him walk. They let him walk. They didn't trade him for nothing, but they let him walk just like they let Harper walk.
I'm not sure what to do with Rendon, Shane, because I feel like he's played too much to be a Hall of Famer at the bank, but his finesse on this, like, oh, you gave me all this money? Oh, my arm!
He's making $38 million a year for someone who doesn't want to play baseball.
He sure is.
$38 million through 2026.
The finesse is strong.
The guy's played 7 games in the last 14 decades.
I love how angry Anthony Rendon makes
you. I hate that guy, dude.
Well, we talk about the things that we said that were correct. I wanted Anthony Rendon on the White Sox so bad.
Me too.
And the way he's performed, it's shocking that he's not on the White Sox.
Well, he will be in about 10 years. Give it 10 years. And then he'll be making $48 million a year.
By the way, the slash line on Anthony Rendon this season, 0, because he hasn't played. In 2024, it was 218, 307, 267.
Oh, man.
And how many games? Like 40?
57. Not bad. In 2023, he played 43 games, and then he played 47 in 22.
And he made $38 million in each of those years.
He played 58 games. Man. Wow. You would have to put three seasons together to get to a full season of games from Anthony Rendon, the Angel. That last
top priority for you, though?
That's never been a top priority for me.
Playing?
The last season, this
never
is why he got the money.
Priority.
The last season with him with the Nationals.
Oh, he crushed it.
You ready?
Yeah.
319, 412, 598.
That's crazy.
How do you know?
He finished third for MVP.
He got $300 million deal to then play 40 games.
Ironically, he's Nate Davis's favorite baseball player. He's number one.
Big
on
ping
his
pong
list.
Guy.
Nate Davis had posters of Anthony Rendon all over his walls.
It's insane, dude.
They both hate their sports.
They seem to. Man, the hug from Ron Washington to Anthony Rendon. Like, I'm so sorry about your time. Come back and play when you're ready. Still not ready? Okay, that's
all right.
Go ahead with your survey. My bad. Anthony Rendon just pisses me off.
No Cubs in the top 20 is distressing. And, you know, talking to a couple people around the game, it's not a shocker that they're not there in the top 20. And I think it's a very interesting, not a shocker in terms of just reputation and the way that they are discussed.
They are not in the top 20.
You shocked?
If you wanted to say,
I was very surprised when I saw it. I'm saying the people that I reached out to who are in the game and know more than me were like, yeah, that's real.
Yeah, it's hard for me to believe that they're a bottom 10 front office. if you wanted to say if them not being in the top 10, okay, you're probably right about that. But when you start talking about like the Reds and stuff, I'm like, I don't know. I wonder why, when you talk to people, why do you think it is that they've fallen out of favor with a front office that does have someone from the Cleveland finishing school of executives and does have someone who has been attached to a World Series, not as the main guy, but as one of the guys. So why is there a disconnect?
Position players, young position players of consequence that are under control for a while and helping you win at the big league level. It looks a little better right now in the middle of this season. This is spring training that these surveys were done. You know,
the Michael Bush thing looks good.
Well, but that's not homegrown.
But still, it's your front office making a trade for a guy that didn't have a position.
Sure.
And you were like, hey, we got a couple of positions that you can play for us.
PCA. And you
another
know,
trade.
Another trade. Miguel Amaya, you know, if that's a guy showing up and doing something for you that you built and brought up. But the Matt Shaw thing looks terrible right now in this moment. And... you know, look, Justin Steele looks good, but they're working at a bullpen. The bullpen has been an issue for, what, 3 straight years? Looks a little better this year. But the stuff that I've heard about is the inability to finish the job right now for this year so far. In
like
terms
development?
Of development? You know, no, like that big money piece,
gotcha.
You know. So that kind of thing, and an inability to create the bullpen depth and variety that you need.
And the big money that you did spend doesn't look great. Dansby Swanson's a negative .2 WAR right now.
Which is astonishing, considering his defensive utility. He really is.
Scuffling at the plate, trying to find it. You watch the at-bats, and he just looks like he's grinding through them, and he's not getting the results. There have been a couple of hard-hit balls where you go, okay, maybe the BABIP gods will shine on him at some point, but right now, 177, 223, 344.
Yeah.
An OPS of 567.
I will say, like, some of the people that I talked to, one was like an old school baseball salt who intimated that they're too in love with numbers, and another was a modern numbers guy who said that was not the problem. You know, so like there's still a little bit of a split. I don't have wonderful clarity on exactly what it is, but this idea that they're not amongst the very best is readily accepted in terms of the top 10.
But aren't there a lot of lists that say that the Cubs minor leagues are pretty good?
Yes. Yes.
So then how can the front office not get credit for that, where you have them hanging out with the Washington Nationals and Cincinnati Reds?
It's a fair question. Maybe because it's 83 and 79 followed by 83 and 79. So whatever conviction there was of being decent has not been good enough for a market of this size.
Wait. Maybe it's because the most successful transaction they've made is Michael Bush in the last few years. Right?
It's pretty, yeah. I mean, that's a successful one, and they gave up some good young pieces to do it.
Baez for PCA is pretty good.
Baez for PCA, it's like...
But that was Theo, wasn't it?
And yeah, I guess it was. No. It was Jed. It was Jed. Theo left before that stuff all happened. Before that deadline happened.
Theo left
happened.
The party before they started to clean up the red solo cups.
Yeah. So it's PCA and see, I've asked this before. Is PCA and let's say Kevin Alcantara is good, those two guys, is that enough to come out of the deadline? Because Bryant, Canario and Caleb Killian are both gone. You know, the other pitcher you got for Rizzo is gone. PCA is here. You got nothing for Schwarber.
I mean, I would argue that the two players that you brought in from Japan have been very important.
So, yeah, Shota is probably your best acquisition.
Right?
Shota's a real good acquisition.
And Seiya's been, I know that he is befuddling, but he's been good.
But that's just money. I'm talking about moves.
I would argue that with the Japanese league, it is money, but it's also scouting. And there are some people that looked at Shota and go, he's maybe a 5. They said, no, we think he's he can be top of the rotation type good, and he was that last year.
Yeah.
So I would.
Shota's a big win. Shota's a massive organizational win. And there's
and
a few
I think
of them.
Say is too.
I think you could argue that. I think you could easily argue they ought to be in this top 20, top 10. Okay, fine. But there's enough organizational health. And we're pointing to some wins on the big league roster right now that look better than this representation.
Cub, his OPS plus is 130. That's, as a Cub, his slash is 278, 354, 473. He's an 828 OPS player. That's a very good player to have added to your lineup.
Texture, by the way, brings up a very good point, a good one. Ben Brown acquisition for half a year of David Robertson is a very nice trade. That looks very good right now. That is a rotation piece with possible a high-end ceiling for, you know, a couple of months of David Robertson. So there's a few. So maybe what thing probably should be 15.
Yeah,
14.
That's what made sense to me.
This is why I wanted to bring it up and do it with you.
All right.
As we talk about it, I think you're probably right that this is a little too harsh.
Yeah.
But outside the top 10 feels all right.
I wonder why though. That's worth doing some digging on too.
Agreed.
You know what I mean?
Agreed.
Why don't we take a break? When we come back, let's get back into the Bears. Dan Wiederer is going to join us, and we're going to talk to him about what he heard at the Piccolo Awards today and what the Bears are getting ready to do with the draft being 2 days away. Don't go anywhere. Spiegel and Holmes here with you until 6 on The Score.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time is subject to change. Max one offer per account.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Founded in 1964, Fremont Bank understands the difference 60 years can make. It's the difference found in the details. The difference between customers and trusted neighbors. The difference between preparing for the coming weeks and planning for the coming years. The difference between serving a community and serving your community. So what difference does 60 years make? All the difference in the world. Fremont Bank. Here for you. Here for good. Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for members. Hass avocados or mangoes, 4 for $5 or $1.25 each. Signature Farms boneless, skinless chicken breasts or thighs, buy one, get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. And enjoy an exclusive digital deal on Sargento shredded or sliced cheeses. 5 to 8 ounce selected varieties, $1.97 each, limit 4. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
When you look at this particular draft class, what would prompt you guys to consider going up from 10?
Good question, Dan.
Lickety-split fashion.
That's what they call me on the beat. Lickety-split.
Lickety-split Wiederer. Dan Wiederer.
We'll mention this mainly because Chicago Tribune writer Dan Wiederer said we would mention this nugget.
Co-host of the Take the North podcast.
Got a better chance of getting a pony for Christmas next year.
One of these years, by the way, I'm going to get you a pony for Christmas just so that you can up that probability.
Bears beat report, an enterprise writer for the Chicago Tribune.
I think this is an exciting time for the whole organization.
Sweet. Thanks, Coach. We'll go first to Dan Wiederer. Go ahead, Dan.
Hey, Dennis, how are you? Welcome to Chicago.
Yeah, man, I'm doing great. How are you?
We'll start with Dan Wiederer.
HG, great to see you. How are you?
Doing great. Great to see you. How are you?
Good. First question for you. We haven't talked to you since the middle of week 18. Can you take us through the season-ending kick from your vantage point and what that moment was like to put the stamp on a season?
Dan, you know what? Thank you for that question. My focus is really on the excitement of being here, working with Ben.
Go next to Dan Wiederer from the Chicago Tribune. Go ahead, Dan.
Dan Wiederer.
His name is Dan Wiederer.
It really is.
Wiederer time.
Bears.
The Take the North pod. Dan Wiederer talks football with you. Huh.
We enjoy Dan Wiederer so much that we had the opportunity to see him and Mark Grody do the Take the North podcast live from the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Studio last week. What a great turnout they had. It was really awesome to see so many people that love that podcast and Groats and Dan's coverage to come see them. He joins us now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. What was that experience like for you, sir?
Yeah, that was fun. Thanks for popping in last week, Lawrence. It was a good little milestone for the Take the North podcast, which we've been doing a good job of growing over the last few years, and it's good to have the support. So I was happy to see your face there in the back of the room.
Damn it, I didn't drop in, so I don't get the thank you, and I don't deserve it. It's a tough moment for me. I'll survive.
There'll be more opportunity speaks.
There we go, Dan. There we go. I like that. Give you the opportunity for the tease. And love that you're in that open from Tanny. You get the first question treatment and respect. That's nice that that's happened a few times on the beat.
Yeah, let's keep that going.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. Dan, read in the Tribune where you guys were asked to give a summary of Ryan Poles' tenure so far. And I'll tell people what your one-word review was, and then you can please expound. Subpar.
Yeah, that's draft-related, and that's just the performance in the draft over the last 3 years. And I think that you just need to try to start to add more difference makers. Look, we heard from Bill Polian 3-plus years ago when they were undergoing the last major reboot about the need for 10 to 12 blue-chip players on your roster to become a legitimate annual contender. And they just haven't added enough of those through the draft yet. There's a handful of guys that have the potential to develop into that. But guys, we walk into this weekend with the Bears having this huge opportunity to use those four picks in the top 75 and add real difference-making impact guys to their roster. And so it's the opportunity here for Ryan Poles to change the narrative a little bit and change the trajectory of the franchise by being a little bit more successful in the draft.
Yeah, it's a very interesting spot that the Bears are in. And we've been discussing how because you don't need a quarterback, it offers you the opportunity to do all sorts of things. Does this draft strike you? I know that they talked about it being wild, and I think that people get real dumb and quarterback dumb when we get closer and closer to the draft. Do you expect that we're going to see some stuff that makes everyone scratch their head between the beginning of the draft and when the Bears pick?
Yeah, I think it's just so unpredictable. And what I always say is it only takes one surprise twist to send like the next hour on a different course than anyone expected, right? You get that one pick where everybody that's an analyst on a TV stage goes, whoa, and then all of a sudden every other team is starting to react to a change in direction that they didn't see coming. And so we don't know where that's going to happen. Is Jacksonville the big wild card at number five with a, you know, first-time GM, first-time coach kind of navigating this the first time together? Like, what happens there in that first hour plus of the draft that then changes where the Bears may want to go? I think if the more exercises you do with the 10th pick, you realize that somebody really good is going to be there for you at number 10. And so I think patience is probably the practical approach. But with that said, if there is a guy that you are absolutely in love with and he's fallen and he's still there at 7 or 8, I think you get on the phone and you consider making some calls, figuring out what it would cost to go get a guy that could become one of those immediate blue chip guys for your roster.
Do you have a gut as to who that guy or guys might be for Ryan Poles and Ben Johnson?
I mean, the two that jump out to me are Mason Graham and Ashton Jeanty. And then the third name that I'll throw in there, because we haven't talked about him enough, just with the assumption that he's going to be long gone by the time the Bears are on the clock, is Jalen Walker. Look, like if he's still there, there's this presumption is that the floor for him is 8. To Carolina. Well, if Carolina's willing to deal out of there and add some picks to bolster their roster, maybe you make that call if Jalen Walker's still there at 8 and you consider what that would look like.
So that's an edge and a running back and a defensive lineman.
Correct.
Which speaks to the excitement of the moment, doesn't it? And the opportunity that is there. Is there a left tackle? It's interesting. What if Will Campbell drops because people get arm length terrified?
Yeah, that'd be a consideration there, depending on how your in-house evaluations have gone.
That's the question. How do they feel about Kieran Amagaji? Do you have any inkling as to how they actually feel about that guy as a left tackle possibility?
Listen, if you're doing this job correctly, you are not taking blind leaps of faith. And they can talk to us all they want about how there was flashes of promise in the Washington game last October from Kieran Amagaji. But at this point, he's a complete unknown commodity. Like, you drafted him a year ago, understanding that he was going to have to come back from an injury. He was going to be a bit of a developmental project. And so you can't walk into this draft feeling like Kieran Amagaji affects it at all, right? Like, you're looking to add known quantity, difference-making players who can start for you for the next decade. And so that tackle position has to be something that's on their radar. I think Kelvin Banks Jr. is a guy that wouldn't be a sexy pick, and the city wouldn't be planning a parade on Friday morning, but it'd be really safe. And you'd have a guy that could lock down that position, and you'd walk in to training camp with a feeling like, man, 1 through 5, Caleb knows who his offensive line is going to be for the next 2 years. And that has to be a really secure feeling for a quarterback and an offensive play caller. And so, even in these first few minutes that we've been talking, you understand the number of intriguing options that are there for them. And then they're just going to have to wait to see how the draft unfolds and be ready to react as it does.
What were the Bears impressed with enough to extend TJ Edwards?
Instincts, just the high level feel he has. I had a short conversation with Dennis Allen about that last week, because it says something with both Gordon and Edwards that they were able to offer these extensions with the backing of a coaching staff that hasn't seen these guys practice yet, right? And so these guys, as coaches, can see what's on the film and then cross-reference the character stuff with the front office that's been here for a few years and say, yeah, like, this is a guy that can be a building block player in our defense. And so with TJ, they seem really, really interested in moving him back to middle linebacker, where he's had some experience in Philly, and letting him operate there and roam and navigate and do the things that he can do with his ability to see and diagnose and react with instincts.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense to me. I enjoyed watching him grow and develop. And I was wondering, when the two linebackers were brought in, I was kind of expecting the other one to be the star, yeah, and this one to be just kind of serviceable. I'm glad I was wrong, I guess. I wonder how they feel about that, though.
Like, that, and what you say there, that's how they were paid, right? Like, Tremaine was supposed to be the big splash impact player, and now he's going to probably have to experiment a little bit at a different position going forward in this defense. And that's what happens with regime changes, and sometimes you make some missteps in free agency that you have to make huge corrections to. And sometimes you can make a small turn of the wrench and get it fixed in that regard. But, they all gush about TJ. And so, this next year, now that he's been rewarded again, will be about taking a step forward in the impact plays. You know, like, it's all good to be steady and reliable and all those other things, but to get this team on a trajectory where it can be a contender, impact has to be a word that we talk about a lot, and that's going to apply to TJ as well as a lot of those other guys on D.
My theory that I want you to poke holes in, if it deserves it, is that left tackle is going to be a Ryan Poles win, at least in terms of this offseason's decision-making. Like, his guy Braxton Jones and his guy Kieran Amagaji will be given a chance to vie for this job, whereas Ben Johnson gets so many other wins in roster decisions. Your thoughts?
Meaning that they won't bring in competition?
Yeah, right. That they're going to let those two guys battle it out.
I'd be surprised if they don't make an effort here in the next week to try to find somebody that can come in and, you know, be a competitor at a minimum. You heard a question I asked Ian Cunningham today about the idea of Darnell Wright being flexible enough to go over to the left side if they identify a right tackle that they really love in the draft. And he left that door open. That was one of the things that attracted them to Darnell Wright when they drafted him a couple of years ago, was that he had played on both sides in college and can do that. And so, I don't think that that's a win that Ryan necessarily wants to claim, that, you know, he's got two a third rounder and a fifth rounder that can battle that job out. I think they want to try to find players that can start and put them in a position to contend in a really tough division. And I think Ben's voice will be loud in trying to make some of those upgrades.
All right. So if they take Armand Membu, who appears to be a right tackle, you think Darnell is the one that would move to left in that situation?
I do. Yes. I think that would be the what you would do if that appealed to you. And so they're going to have to decide that. And, you know, hopefully in the, you know, couple weeks after the draft, the month after the draft, we start to get a little bit more of that insight into how they viewed prospects going into this draft, because it's hard to say what they think of certain guys. And if Membu's athleticism, you know, strikes them as, man, we can't pass on him if he's there, well, then you've got to consider a position change for Darnell Wright. And they obviously have some level of comfort in considering that.
If we go back to last year's draft and we go through the receivers again, and think about Rome Odunze as a fit for the Ben Johnson system, like, I kind of feel like most systems he would probably be a good fit for, just from looking at his production and player personality that we've seen both at Washington here. Is that fair to assume, even not having seen it, that he would be a good fit for what Ben Johnson wants to do?
Well, you heard what Antoine Randall-El thought last week, and he had Rome as his number one receiver above Malik Nabers and Marvin Harrison Jr., and Antoine Randall-El knows what Ben Johnson's offense was all about. So that gives you a little bit of a glimpse into what they think that they can get out of Rome here in year two. Ryan Poles was pretty emphatic today with Rome winning the Piccolo Award and saying that he expects a pretty big jump in the second year here. And so they're going to try to unlock that. And he's obviously got all the talent, all the character, everything that you want to try to get that jump started. And then it'll be up to the quarterback and the play caller to help that development occur as rapidly as they want it to.
What's the best sign for the Bears, depending on how the top five falls on Thursday night? What will you be watching going, "Ooh, man, that just turned out well for the Bears"?
I mean, it's not going to happen, but Shedeur Sanders being picked before nine is one that would obviously certainly bump some talent down to them. And then, yeah, I think you just have to be nimble to see what happens in that slot from like five to nine. Again, I think Jacksonville's a real wild card here. And then you're just going to have to decide. Again, I just think patience is there for you. If you want to just sit at 10 and wait to see what comes to you, you're not going to be disappointed. And so it's going to be fun, you know, and the Genty conversation is one that, you know, I signed up for day one when it started back in January to talk about the consideration of that. If he gets down near you, that's fun. Like, that's an exciting possibility to have that conversation, that debate. And then if he did wind up here to figure out what that looked like in this offense.
Dan, what did you think of Dennis Allen talking about Kyler Gordon maybe learning a couple of different positions so that he's on the field more?
I'm curious. You know, I want to see what that looks like. I want to kind of get a better feel for what that vision and that experiment is going to be, because they clearly think that he's got potential that hasn't been fully unlocked yet. We know what we think of Kyler's instincts and his ability to kind of see the game through a lens that makes him pretty dangerous and pretty dynamic. It's cool, I think, that Dennis Allen wants to dip into that creativity as well and try to figure out, okay, how can we maximize this and how can we have him involved as more than just a slot corner? And so we're going to have to just kind of keep our eyes on that, particularly when we get into training camp and they start to do that on the field and you get a little bit better feel for what they think.
70% of the snaps, not enough for a player that good, you know? Like,
you're paying them to play more than that now, too, right?
That's right. It's like Dan Reeder, like, just on Take the North, that's not enough for us to use him at the score. It's why we had to put you on today. That's how it works around these parts. Thanks,
Yeah, Dan. I'm happy I was able to come on.
We are too, and continued success with the Take the North podcast and everything that you're doing over at the Tribune. It was great to see you interact with people there, because I'm sure a lot of them are like, oh, I've heard Dan Weeder or I've read him, but for them to be in the room with you, I thought was a cool thing.
I'm a much more cuddly person when I'm in person than when I'm interacting with people on social media. We've all learned that over the years. And so it's better for me to just let that side of it out and let them see that I'm not as big of a pompous windbag as I've been accused of being on social media.
It's a shame Danny never learned that. Thanks, Dan.
It is a
shame. Enjoy draft week, fellas.
That is Dan Weederer from the Take the North podcast. You hear him do shows here. You can also read him in the Tribune. Coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, we're going to talk with Nico Horner. He's going to join us around 4:10. In the next segment, Speak, I just want to throw something at you as maybe a way to go about things in the public square of sports media. I saw something this week that I was like, I think that was handled really well, and I wanted to point that out. We'll talk about it next here on The Score.
Esa-Pekka Salonen's final concerts as music director of the San Francisco Symphony bring legendary artists and epic music to Davies Symphony Hall, culminating in Mahler's electrifying Second Symphony. Tickets at sfsymphony.org.
If you love your customers, you have to try RingCentral. No matter the size of your business, every call, every text, every meeting, every customer conversation matters. With RingCentral, you get a reliable business phone, a modern contact center, and built-in AI across every conversation, so you can focus on the moments that matter. See for yourself at ringcentral.com.
RingCentral, intelligent communications you can trust.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sarah. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Who would dare interrupt me during my midday bath? Yeah. Oh, the Spiegel and Holmes Show.
Afternoons on The Score.
I would live in Athens if I didn't live in Orlando. Would have gone to Georgia if I didn't go to Florida State. But that dog is ugly. Give me this thing here. Ooh. That's an ugly dog.
Lawrence, this touched you the way that ESPN seemed to handle Lee Corso's last few years and exit. This hit you deeply.
Yeah, I thought that they handled Lee Corso very delicately over the last couple years. You can see how close he and Kirk Herbstreit are. And Herbstreit did a lot of like heavy lifting to make Lee Corso a part of what was going on at College Game Day. I think that the way that ESPN has handled all three of their octogenarians has been outstanding. What's gone on with Lee Corso? What's gone on with Dick Vitale, as he has had to fight multiple bouts of cancer, and he's come back and been a part of it. And UB Brown, you know, I think that they have given you a really good template for how you are supposed to treat older people on your roster that should be revered, have been revered for the entertainment or the knowledge in the case of UB. I think they've done it really well. They clearly moved back from Corso being a bigger part of game day.
Mm-hmm.
And they used him in the space that people most recognize his contribution to the show. It's fun. And I don't think that they were necessarily trying to do it this way. I just think that the way that they did it was very cool and touching, that they were able to help him continue to be a part of something that he still wanted to be a part of in some way. And I don't think it hampered the content. I think they figured out a way to just go, you know what? We're gonna let Pat take some.
Well, that's the thing
of the heavy lifting here, and the guests do some of it. And when it's time to have Lee Corso, we're gonna have it, and we're all gonna still enjoy it.
It's like how we treat Dustin,
a little bit,
and David Hall.
That's Mr. David to you.
It's a humane approach that we don't often give credit to sports media for having at the. In the twilight of a legend's career.
Yeah.
So I can see that. I think what's unspoken in that, and I'll try to speak to it, is how hard Corso worked to stay good and vibrant and relevant, and how hard Hubie Brown has worked to stay sharp and vibrant and relevant. And, I haven't watched a lot of Dick Vitale. And
He's still on it.
He's well, good.
The issue with Vital has been the physical, right?
Yeah, like the physical aspect. Yeah.
He's still watching games and still, you know, is connected, and seeing him have fun when he pops up on campuses.
Sure. Well, this speaks to a larger point about, you know, older folks. Like, you know, we all know them in our regular life, and it's certainly true in sports media or in managing jobs and what have you. There's old 70 and young 70. Like
Pete Carroll.
Are you energetic? Are you sharp? Are you working to stay healthy? Are you asking questions to continue to grow? Like, and that is on the humane issue. We can all
understand
that. Absolutely.
Of kind of where you're at and how can we help you be your best version of yourself?
Man,
and I think ESPN deserves a ton of credit for the way that they've handled things with Lee Corso.
I had an unbelievable visit with my dad and my stepmother in New Jersey a few weeks back. And we had this great long conversation, a few different ones, about growing. This is a woman in her 80s, and my dad is 91, continuing to talk about growing and learning every day. You know, like, if that's your approach, then you can be vital and present and part of things for a long, long time.
No doubt about it. Our 4 o'clock hour is filled with some fun. Our buddy Nico Horner is going to join us in about 15 minutes. Until then, let's talk about the fact that the Dodgers are back for the last time at Wrigley. It's next here on The Score.